Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And there is a campaign that we would ask you to support. That is Jerry Winstrand's, W-I-S-T-R-A-N-D. Or I don't know if there's an R in there. Winstrand. Anyway, if you go to Reclaiming the Republic candidate endorsement page, you will find access to his donations, to his page, and everything else right there on that page. And without any further ado, we want to get back into these Federalist Papers so we can wrap these things up and get into the real debates on the Constitution, starting with New York. And in so doing, welcome back, Sean.
Good to be here, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your diligence and support with this stuff. So what we just finished was paragraph 18, and we were talking about we talked a little bit about the corruption of both the jury and the court. And so let's go ahead and pick this up with paragraph 19.
Paragraph 19, notwithstanding, therefore, the doubts I have expressed as to the essentiality of trial by jury in civil cases to liberty, I admit that it is in most cases, under proper regulation, an excellent method of determining questions of property, and that on this account alone it would be entitled to a constitutional provision in its favor if it were possible to fix the limits within which it ought to be comprehended. There is, however, in all cases, great difficulty in this, and men not blinded by enthusiasm must be sensible that in a federal government, which is a composition of societies whose ideas and institutions in relation to the matter materially vary from each other, that difficulty must not be a little augmented. For my own part, at every new view I take of the subject, I become more convinced of the reality of the obstacles which, we are authoritatively informed, prevented the insertion of a provision on this head in the plan of the convention.
Okay, so I don't think there's really much here as far as, you know, aha, or anything else. It's just a continuation of the same old argument. So let's get into, because he's bringing up, I noticed, Britain in paragraph 20. So let's dive into paragraph 20.
The great difference between the limits of the jury trial in different states is not generally understood. And as it must have considerable influence on the sentence we ought to pass upon the omission complained of in regard to this point, an explanation of it is necessary. In this state, our judicial establishments resemble more nearly than in any other those of Great Britain. We have courts of common law, courts of probates, analogous in certain matters to spiritual courts in England, a court of admiralty, and a court of chancery. In the courts of common law only, the trial by jury prevails, and this with some exceptions. In all the others, a single judge presides and proceeds in general either according to the courts of the canon or civil law, without the aid of a jury. In New Jersey, there is a court of chancery which proceeds like ours, but neither courts of admiralty nor probates, in the sense in which these last are established with us. In the state courts of common law have the cognizance of those causes which with us are determinable in the courts of admiralty and probates. And of course, the jury trial is more extensive in New Jersey than in New York. In Pennsylvania, this is perhaps still more the case, for there is no court of chancery in the state, and its common law courts have equity jurisdiction. It has a court of admiralty, but none of probates, at least on the plan of ours. Delaware has, in these respects, imitated Pennsylvania. Maryland approaches more nearly to New York, as does also Virginia, except that the latter has a plurality of chancellors. North Carolina bears most affinity to Pennsylvania, South Carolina to Virginia. I believe, however, that in some of those states which have distinct courts of admiralty, The causes depending on them are tribal by juries. In Georgia, there are none but common law courts, and an appeal, of course, lies from the verdict of one jury to another, which is called a special jury, and for which a particular mode of appointment is marked out. In Connecticut, they have no district courts, no distinct courts, either of chancery or of admiralty, and the courts of probates have no jurisdiction of causes. The common law courts have admiralty and, to a certain extent, equity jurisdiction. In cases of importance, their General Assembly is the only court of chancery. In Connecticut, therefore, the trial by jury extends in practice further than in any other state yet mentioned. Rhode Island is, I believe, in this particular, pretty much in the situation of Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire in regard to the blending of law, equity, and admiralty jurisdictions are in a similar predicament. In the four eastern states, the trial by jury not only stands upon a broader foundation than in other states, but is attended with a peculiarity unknown in its full extent to any of them. There is an appeal, of course, from one jury to another, till there have been two verdicts out of three on one side.
So in reading this, I hope you garnered how problematic the whole justice system was throughout the states. The common law was a different thing in almost every state. You've heard me say this, right?
I believe so, sir.
Okay. So you've heard me say how common law has been implemented in all different ways. Now, one of the things he talks about, right, I've in covering the problems and the difficulty in getting one's arms around what is common law in America, this helps you understand this. And so he does a decent job in trying to create what courts exist in what. And he actually even says how the legislature, the general court, is the one that takes care of admiralty and these other things, what the Supreme Court does today. Now, the Constitution shifted admiralty court, chancery court, all of those types of things over to the federal government. So in other words, the states no longer are to have an admiralty court, maritime court, or chancery, to where they're dealing with, you know, problems and controversies between their state and a foreign state. That all shifted to the United States court. And so we no longer have ambassadors from the state of Virginia. They all come from the United States, which are appointments of the president. So helping people understand where the jurisdiction of justice really lies in America, technically, because he talks about these different courts. The common law court is a very specific court where the trial by jury is to be had. How many trials by jury today are even held in most courts across the United States, barring Louisiana, of course? And I'll tell you that it's only in criminal trials. Only in criminal trials. If it goes to trial, there will typically be a trial by jury unless the defendant waives his right to a trial by jury. So the rest of common law court, which common law would have basically dealt with, at that point in time, there was no such thing as civil divorce, civil marriage. But now that's become a part of that. And that would be a part of common law court, just like property, real estate, those types of things would be a common law court. The states, what they have done is they've created very unique courts for each of these common law things. Now, the Constitution happened to create, or I should say the federal government happened to create this thing called the Seventh Amendment that said in common law cases where the controversy is greater than $20, a trial by jury shall be preserved. The right to a trial by jury shall be preserved, something like that. So as we look at these court cases, or I should say these unique courts that have created magistrates, or I should say not magistrates, judges, to put a justice or a judge administrator over the court and the rulings and so forth, they're not giving you a trial by jury in a family law court. See, family law was all under common law. And divorce is a part of family law, just like, you know, child abuse, or unless it's a criminal type of thing, you know, reckless endangerment, that type of thing, but or child problems, what have you. And really, delinquent children and that type of stuff, equal. Let's say your child goes out and burns somebody's, you know, property, damages a car, and they're in family court for that. Is that going to be a trial by jury? The controversy is the value of the car. I don't know of many cars that are less than $20 a day.
It's all very confusing, I know that.
Yeah. So,
who decides what gets put in which court?
Well, the reality is the people should be deciding what gets put in one court. The justices, the bar, has moved all of these things over to make them very efficient and profitable for the courts and for the judges and for the lawyers. See, in a common law court, you're going into a court administrator where you're going to have a trial by jury, and the jury is going to actually make the ultimate decision. And you're going to be able to state your case whether you have a lawyer or not. You don't need to have a lawyer in a common law court. As a matter of fact, common law court was to take care of those typical things and the prosecutor. It's not an attorney term, but it is basically the patriarch or the matriarch, the mom or the father, the advocates. So they have the ability and they have the responsibility of being the advocate to the court to, you know, plead their case. And we've gotten to a point where they've created such technicalities where they want to make, you know, these barriers to allow people to defend themselves, because that makes money for lawyers. But common law was a place where you didn't have lawyers. A common law was where people actually stood up and they said, this is what happened. And in some of these cases, you would have the jury able to even ask questions. Like in a grand jury, they were, you know, seeking and asking questions in addition to the, you know, the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney, or what have you. So we've lost our legal system because the bar and the judges of America, the British Accredited Registry, and all of these opportunists in America in our legal system have basically said, let's create a system that we can control. And what they have successfully done is not only created a system that they control, but they've created a system that they have basically made it the last say on everything, because everybody believes that the courts have the last say. They don't. You can always oppose a verdict from a court, let's say, and this happened in Hot Springs, Wyoming, just this past year or so, where a person went and appealed to a court requesting to have his property relabeled, recharacterized, instead of, you know, like a business or what have you, you know, agricultural, ranch, what have you, to something different, because he wasn't using that property in that mechanism or in that term. It was just a basic residence, I think. And he said that these new taxes over, you know, properties with this type of classification, this is going to destroy me. I'm going to lose my house. And the judge said, tough, we're not reclassifying you. Even though he didn't have it. So he pleaded his case to the county commissioners, and the county commissioners reclassified his house. Now the judge is all upset because he bypassed the court and the court ruling, and these legislators actually redressed this grievance. Folks, I hope you understand the ramifications, one, and the situation and the magnitude of the problem that we're facing just in this alone. So, again, this one paragraph is probably another great meaty paragraph that helps everybody understand how the Constitution could not be designed successfully to induce a single system without forcing every state and government and justice system to change. And they basically said, no way, we're not doing that. We will, we have to respect the sovereignty of the states and whatever they've chosen to do. So we must conform. Now, whether Hamilton talks about this, I believe if we haven't found it yet, we will find, because I think we did, I think he did cover this, where the courts have the authority to unify the law as well as unify the justice systems. But let's keep going. This is a great paragraph, though, for reference on how far out, the states were. They were not aligned in any way regarding a Republican form of government. Okay, so paragraph 21. And, we'll just take these one at a time. Go ahead.
From this sketch, it appears that there is a material diversity as well as in the modification as in the extent of the institution of trial by jury in civil cases in the several states. And from this fact, these obvious reflections flow. First, that no general rule could have been fixed upon by the convention which would have corresponded with the circumstances of all the states. And secondly, that more or at least as much might have been hazarded by taking the system of any one state for a standard as by omitting a provision altogether and leaving the matter, as has been done, to legislative regulation.
Okay. All right. Let's continue. Keep going. Thanks.
22. The propositions which have been made for supplying the omission have rather served to illustrate than to obviate the difficulty of the thing. The minority of Pennsylvania have proposed this mode of expression for the purpose. Quote, trial by jury shall be as heretofore, end quote. And this, I maintain, will be senseless and nugatory. The United States, in the united or collective capacity, are the object to which all general provisions in the Constitution must necessarily be construed to refer. Now it is evident that though trial by jury, with various limitations, is known in each state individually, yet in the United States as such, it is at this time altogether unknown, because the present federal government has no judiciary power whatever, and consequently, there is no proper antecedent or previous establishment to which the term heretofore could relate. It would therefore be destitute of a precise meaning and inoperative from its uncertainty.
And see, right there is a great example of technicality, how the courts and how our government likes to create technicalities to, as he uses the term, obviate, to basically remove, hey, we really don't have an argument here because we don't have a track record. We don't have a heretofore. Go ahead, keep going.
As on the one hand, the form of the provision would not fulfill the intent of its proposers. So, on the other, if I apprehended that intent rightly, it would be in itself inexpedient. I presume it to be that causes in the federal court should be tried by jury. If, in the state where the court sat, that mode of trial would obtain in a similar case in the state courts, that is to say, admiralty causes should be tried in Connecticut by a jury, in New York without one, the capricious operation of so dissimilar a method of trial in the same cases under the same government is of itself sufficient to indispose every well-regulated judgment towards it. Whether the cause should be tried with or without a jury would depend, in a great number of cases, on the accidental situation of the courts and parties.
Ah, okay. So the accidental situation. So let's keep going, because let's see if there's a way of, you know, creating a single process instead of, you know, whimsical outcomes or whimsical cases. Let's go ahead.
But this is not, in my estimation, the great objection. I feel a deep and deliberate conviction that there are many cases in which the trial by jury is an ineligible one. I think it's so particularly in cases which concern the public peace with foreign nations, that is, in most cases where the question turns wholly on the laws of nations. Of this nature, among others, are all prize causes. Juries cannot be supposed competent to investigations that require a thorough knowledge of the laws and usages of nations, and they will sometimes be under the influence of impressions which will not suffer them to pay sufficient regard to those considerations of public policy which ought to guide their inquiries. There would, of course, be always a danger that the rights of other nations might be infringed by the decisions, so as to afford occasions of reprisal and war. Though the proper province of juries be to determine matters of fact, yet in most cases legal consequences are complicated with fact in such a manner as to render a separation impracticable.
Interesting. So apparently he believes that it would be best to have a single judge. Even our system's not that way. So how many Supreme Court cases are tried in a jury trial?
None of them.
Actually, every single one. Because the nine justices are the jury.
Okay.
Right? That makes sense, right? And so yeah. In trials of laws of nations and in those types of things, the Nuremberg trial, that was a specific nation, even though they tried to do it, I think, as a combined, you know, effort of nations and so forth to hold Germany accountable, right? There was this concept of having a jury trial where, you know, everybody, the whole point is, though, is that how do you have impartiality when you have a set group of judges? And when you have a set group of we'll just call them jurists. I've always complained that when you actually go into, you know, the Supreme Court, you're walking right into a biased wall of the Ivy Tower. If what you're saying does not jive with their crap, then you're walking into a buzzsaw. There's no justice there. There's no impartiality, which is why, you know, they could all, if we let them, you know, fill pages of their opinions on every case, which is why they kind of, the dissenting justice, you know, on the dissenting side, they pick one justice, and on the winning side, they pick a different justice to provide the opinions. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. Because they're filled with opinions. I mean, every person is filled with opinions. I truly believe that you can't sever these associations with, you know, where you got your education from and so forth. And my real problem is that JDs come from, you know, institutions that bake bias into you. And so that's why I would love to see, you know, our system completely become far more representative. And this is where, in representation, we could actually start preserving, you know, representation of each of the independent states, such as Louisiana, you know, because the, you know, maybe the Louisiana governor is going to want to pick somebody that got their JD in Louisiana instead of the Ivy Tower. Up in, you know, in the Ivy League, I should say. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
You know, there's so many problems with the courts. One of them is the recusing. I mean, it should be easy peasy to get a judge off of a case. You know, if there's any impropriety, if there's any associate, good case in point, the Bob Schultz petition and the, I would say, his case that went before the Supreme Court, which Gorsuch in New York already basically made a ruling on this, was involved in basically shooing away this case. He should not have actually had any ability to do that. And this is what they do. They own it. They own our justice system, and they're going to decide, that's just a waste of time. Because they can't see it any other way. They're not objective, and they basically are there to support a system that was designed not to give us justice, but to create controversies and create money and make people rich and powerful. And that's not justice. So anyway, what do you think? I mean, do you think we have a good justice system? And regarding this, you know, these juries, you know, judge panel juries and so forth, how do we fix it?
I think we need a method of accountability for the people that are put in those positions, because I don't know why it stuck with me, but we had the juvenile justice system as well, and we had more than a handful of judges who were getting paid cash money kickbacks for putting juveniles in juvenile detention centers by the people who were running the juvenile detention centers. And when you have something like that going on, and there is no jury, the judges made the decisions all on their own, so they had a straight line to, if I convict this kid and send him to the juvenile detention center for 5 years, I'm going to get this much money every year from this company that is building these juvenile detention centers. And like you said, it's become a racket. I mean, you see in all the movies where the old sheriff or the judge are in cahoots to use the prisoners for construction or whatever they're using them for, because they don't have to pay them. It's free labor. It's the same thing as slave labor. So right. You just took the plantation system and moved it into the judicial system.
Right.
And there's a lot of that that goes on. And, I mean, it's, I guess it would be a just sign of the times that, you know, the system just gets more and more corrupt. But I think that if we would never have had this Supreme Court takeover of the interpretation of the law, I think that was like the crack in the dam that just allowed everything else to just start seeping.
Right, and redefining, and this is where they seize control. Absolutely. Absolutely. So technically, what should have happened, I think this is, you know, hindsight being 2020, the states themselves failed to put a mechanism in the Constitution to ensure if there was a question on what anything in the Constitution meant, that there would be zero interpretation, that what would be required would be a convening of a panel of, you know, the states to basically go into the ratification debates to determine how that, you know, that one issue, that one clause in the Constitution is under scrutiny. If there was no clarity, then the states themselves would collectively come together and provide the clarity. It would come from a majority. And when I say a majority, it would require a supermajority, not 50% plus one. Does that make sense?
Isn't that what the Senate was designed or meant to be?
Not when it came to clarifying the Constitution.
Representation of the states?
Not when it came to clarifying the Constitution. Only the parties can do that. And the Senate are only proxies in the Senate over issues that they have to vote on. There was nothing in the Constitution to give them the responsibility of clarifying the Constitution. I think it's one, common knowledge, or just basically common sense. I hate to sound like Hamilton. That when there's a doubt as to what a clause meant, the court should actually go back to Congress and say, hey, we don't have a hard definition. Because what they do today is, well, we don't have a hard definition, so we'll create one. And then we'll insert this into our annotated Constitution so that everybody will follow our lead, because that's what we're doing here. We're leading because it's our Constitution. Somebody's got to do it. And technically, that somebody must be the states, not the courts. So, anything else?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go on with 25.
25. It will add great weight to this remark in relation to prize causes to mention that the method of determining them has been thought worthy of particular regulation in various treaties between different powers of Europe, and that pursuant to such treaties, they are determinable in Great Britain in the last resort, before the king himself in his privy council, where the fact as well as the law undergoes a re-examination. This alone demonstrates the impolicy of inserting a fundamental provision in the Constitution which would make the state systems a standard for the national government in the article under consideration, and the danger of encumbering the government with any constitutional revisions, the propriety of which is not indisputable.
Okay, so keep going with 26.
My convictions are equally strong that great advantages result from the separation of the equity from the law jurisdiction, and that the causes which belong to the former would be improperly committed to juries. The great and primary use of a court of equity is to give relief in extraordinary cases which are exceptions to the general rules, to unite the jurisdiction of such cases with the ordinary jurisdiction must have a tendency to unsettle the general rules and to subject every case that arises to a special determination, while a separation of the one from the other has the contrary effect of rendering one a sentinel over the other and of keeping each within the expedient limits. Besides this, the circumstances that constitute cases proper for courts of equity are in many instances so nice and intricate that they are incompatible with the genius of trial by jury. They require often such long, deliberate, and critical investigation as would be impracticable to men called from their occupations and obliged to decide before they were permitted to return to them. The simplicity and expedition which form distinguishing characteristics of this mode of trial require that the matter to be decided should be reduced to some single and obvious point, while the litigation usual in chancery frequently comprehend a long train of minute and independent particulars.
Okay, so, well, let's keep going, because this is more coherent than some of his other stuff. So let's just keep going, because he's really not dealing with, and I'm just waiting for him to go to the necessity of the federal courts in ensuring that the law is applied equally where they wrangle and go in and start forcing the states to align with the federal courts instead of vice versa. So go ahead, 27.
It is true that the separation of the equity from the legal jurisdiction is peculiar to the English system of jurisprudence, which is the model that has been followed in several of the states. But it is equally true that the trial by jury has been unknown in every case in which they have been united, and the separation is essential to the preservation of that institution in its pristine purity. The nature of a court of equity will readily permit the extension of its jurisdiction to matters of law, but it is not a little to be suspected that the attempt to extend the jurisdiction of the courts of law to matters of equity will not only be unproductive of the advantages which may be derived from courts of chancery on the plan upon which they are established in this state, but will tend gradually to change the nature of the courts of law and to undermine the trial by jury by introducing questions too complicated for a decision in that mode.
Okay. Okay, so still nothing as far as really how this is going to affect the states. It's just talking about these functions through the processes of the court. Go ahead with 28, 20, and 29.
These appear to be conclusive reasons against incorporating the systems of all the states in the formation of the national judiciary. According to what may be conjectured to have been the attempt of the Pennsylvania minority, let us now examine how far the proposition of Massachusetts is calculated to remedy the supposed defect.
There we go. These appeared to be conclusive reasons against incorporating the systems of all states in the formation of the national judiciary, according to what may be conjectured to have been the attempt of the Pennsylvania minority. Okay, so this is where he's just now starting to point out that, hey, there's been this pushback of trying to, like I said, force the states to align with the federal versus the federal aligning with each individual state separately. Keep going with 29.
It is in this form, quote, in civil actions between citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in action that common law may be tried by a jury if the parties or either of them request it, end quote.
Okay. Now, 30.
This, at best, is a proposition confined to one description of causes, and the inference is fair, either that the Massachusetts Convention considered that as the only class of federal causes in which the trial by jury would be proper, or that if desirous of a more extensive provision, they found it impracticable to devise one which would properly answer the end. If the first, the omission of a regulation respecting so partial an object, can ever be considered as a material imperfection in the system. If the last, it affords a strong corroboration of the extreme difficulty of the thing. This is not all. Mm-hmm. If we advert to the observations already made respecting the courts that subsist in the several states of the Union and the different powers exercised by them, it will appear that there are no expressions more vague and indeterminate than those which have been employed to characterize that species of causes which is intended shall be entitled to a trial by jury. In this state, the boundaries between actions at common law and actions of equitable jurisdiction are ascertained in conformity to the rules which prevail in England upon that subject. In many of the other states, the boundaries are less precise. In some of them, every cause is to be tried in a court of common law, and upon that foundation, every action may be considered as an action at common law, to be determined by a jury if the parties or either of them choose it. Hence, the same irregularity and confusion will be introduced by compliance with this proposition that I have already noticed as resulting from the regulation proposed by the Pennsylvania minority. In one state, a case would receive its determination from a jury if the parties or either of them requested it. But in another state, a cause exactly similar to the other must be decided without the intervention of a jury because the state judicatories varied as to common law jurisdiction.
Okay, keep going.
Because it is obvious, therefore, that the Massachusetts proposition upon this subject cannot operate as a general regulation until some uniform plan with respect to the limits of common law and equitable jurisdictions shall be adopted by the different states. To devise a plan of that kind is a task arduous in itself, and which it will require much time and reflection to mature. It would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to suggest any general regulation that would be acceptable to all the states in the Union, or that would perfectly quadrate with the several state institutions.
Ah, quadrate. Okay, so keep going, because I'm waiting for the shoe to drop, where it becomes the obvious thing that the federal court and the Supreme Court, when the necessity comes, that they will and can and must dictate, you know, these functions of the justice system as well as the laws, or I should say, the verdicts. You can't do that, and this needs to promulgate out to every state.
It may be asked, why could not a reference have been made to the Constitution of this state, taking that which is allowed by me to be a good one as a standard for the United States? I answer that it is not very probable the other states would entertain the same opinion of our institutions as we do ourselves. It is natural to suppose that they are hitherto more attached to their own, and that each would struggle for the preference. If the plan of taking one state as a model for the whole had been thought of in the convention, it is to be presumed that the adoption of it in that body would have been rendered difficult by the predilection of each representation in favor of its own government. And it must be uncertain which of the states would have been taken as the model. It has been shown that many of them would be improper ones, and I leave it to conjecture whether, under all circumstances, it is most likely that New York or some other state would have been preferred. But admit that a judicious selection could have been effected in the convention. Still, there would have been a great danger of jealousy and disgust in the other states at the partiality which had been shown to the institutions of one. The enemies of the plan would have been furnished with a fine pretext for raising a host of local prejudices against it, which perhaps might have hazarded, in no considerable degree, its final establishment.
Okay, so that kind of makes me, go back to what was the system that was the most prevailing or the most common. And technically, the most common, as I look at the table, because I kind of created this table as you're looking at it, and it seems like the most common would be that the courts would be subjugated and or controlled by the legislature, in other words, by Congress, that Congress itself would regulate it and basically control the courts and keeping the courts from being able to control anybody. That Congress would be the ones that would be entrusted to ensure that they don't trample, you know, the Senate was supposed to be, you know, ensuring that they don't trample on the state sovereignty, and that the people, you know, in the House of Representatives, they would make sure that they don't trample on the rights of the people. So I would say that that would be the common, without actually particular, you know, looking at one particular state, because I'm looking at this and it seems like, well, I think New Jersey or Rhode Island is just out there, so you can't line that up with anything. But for the most part, it seems like four, if not more, states that this is the most common out of all of the states would be that way, to have the legislature basically, you know, making all the final decisions or the tough decisions, what have you, to where the court only deals with the controversies, and when a question comes up, they just throw it up to the legislature and they redress it, they fix it. So, okay, let's go on to the next one.
34. To avoid the embarrassments of a definition of the cases which the trial by jury ought to embrace, it is sometimes suggested by men of enthusiastic tempers that a provision might have been inserted for establishing it in all cases whatsoever. For this, I believe, no precedent is to be found in any member of the Union, and the considerations which have been stated in discussing the proposition of the minority of Pennsylvania must satisfy every sober mind that the establishment of the trial by jury in all cases would have been an unpardonable error in the plan.
Yeah, and actually, once they put it out there, it would have made anything and everything else moot. Keep going, 35, 36, go ahead.
In short, the more it is considered, the more arduous will appear the task of fashioning a provision in such a form as not to express too little to answer the purpose, or too much to be advisable, or which might not have opened other sources of opposition to the great and essential object of introducing a firm national government.
Okay.
I cannot but persuade myself, on the other hand, that the different lights in which the subject has been placed in the course of these observations will go far towards removing in candid minds the apprehensions they may have entertained on the point. They have tended to show that the security of liberty is materially concerned only in the trial by jury in criminal cases, which is provided for in most ample manner in the plan of the convention, that even in far the greatest proportion of civil cases and those in which the great body of the community is interested, that mode of trial will remain in its full force as established in the state constitutions, untouched and unaffected by the plan of the convention. That is in no case abolished by that plan, and that there are great, if not insurmountable, difficulties in the way of making any precise and proper provision for it in a constitution for the United States.
Okay. So let's just keep going, because I'm still waiting for that shoe to drop. And we've still got some ways to go, apparently. But keep, again, he's talking about some obvious things, but he still hasn't got down to where I think, because I know he says it. He said it either earlier, or he says it maybe in the next one, where everybody forgets everything he says in this one. So maybe it's in 84, but let's keep going.
The best judges of the matter will be the least anxious for a constitutional establishment of the trial by jury in civil cases, and will be the most ready to admit that the changes which are continually happening in the affairs of a society may render a different mode of determining questions of property preferable in many cases in which that mode of trial now prevails. For my part, I acknowledge myself to be convinced that even in this state it might be advantageously extended to some cases to which it does not at present apply, and might as advantageously be abridged in others. It is conceded by all reasonable men that it ought not to obtain in all cases. The examples of innovations which contract its ancient limits, as well in these states as in Great Britain, afford a strong presumption that its former extent has been found inconvenient, and give room to suppose that future experience may discover the propriety and utility of other exceptions. I suspect it to be impossible in the nature of the thing to fix the salutary point at which the operation of the institution ought to stop, and this is with me a strong argument for leaving the matter to the discretion of the legislature.
Okay. All right. And currently, the discretion of the legislature is the rule of the day in the United States. Other than, you know, obviously New York has a much more firm and independent court. I think Massachusetts was another. I forget the other one. I think there was maybe another one. Anyway, 38.
This is now clearly understood to be the case in Great Britain, and it is equally so in the state of Connecticut. And yet it may be safely affirmed that more numerous encroachments have been made upon the trial by jury in this state since the Revolution, though provided for by a positive article of our Constitution, than has happened in the same time either in Connecticut or Great Britain. It may be added that these encroachments have generally originated with the men who endeavor to persuade people they are the warmest defenders of popular liberty, but who have rarely suffered constitutional obstacles to arrest them in a favored career. The truth is that the general genius of government is all that can be substantially relied upon for permanent effects. Particular provisions, though not altogether useless, have far less virtue and efficacy than are commonly ascribed to them, and the one of them will never be, with men of sound discernment, a decisive objection to any plan which exhibits the leading characters of a good government.
Okay, and we've got, 2.5 minutes, and 39 is very short, so let's round this up, and I guess it's going to be 84 where the shoe drops. Go ahead, 39.
It certainly sounds not a little harsh and extraordinary to affirm that there is no security for liberty in a constitution which expressly establishes the trial by jury in criminal cases, because it does not do it in civil also. While it is a notorious fact that Connecticut, which has been always regarded as the most popular state in the Union, can boast of no constitutional provision for either.
Ah, okay. All right, so any things that you note on or you want to comment on as far as how he's... Go ahead.
I hate to say this, but I think he makes a good point about the diversity in the systems throughout the states.
Yep.
And that definitely is a sticking point when you have the supremacy clause and where the states had to turn over people wanted in other states and under indictment or whatever, what have you. That could really cause serious problems, I would think. To where you had different systems where this might be a trial by jury, this might not be, and you're trying to, the person flees to another state or they committed some crime in another state, and now you have two different judicial systems trying to figure out how to deal with that situation. I could see that.
Yeah.
But the main thing is that the Constitution's enumerated. It's not really hard to figure out what their power and authority is and isn't. So I think a lot of this is just narrative and propaganda trying to gaslight people into thinking that there's some mysterious thing that's going to happen, that they're going to need, you know, this specific plan that he's talking about.
Yeah, so he did a great case of helping everybody understand all of these differences. Whether he's doing a great job of defending a judiciary or a federal judicial system that is designed to conform to each of the independent states, he hasn't said that. He just says that, you know, they couldn't just make this carte blanche, common law be the law of the land, or trial by jury shall be, you know, the trial mode for everything, or, you know, they couldn't create these axioms that they knew going in that when they were dealing with one particular state in a case, in an appeal case, that they would have to conform to that framework of their common law, what have you. So I believe, and I think we may have covered the unified, but I think in 84, this is where I think he's going to lay out that the necessity, so that there is a unification, that the federal courts do that. And that's where he's going to basically say it'll be a natural function for the courts to unify the law. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.